This is Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network here at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Haston. Thanks so much for joining us on August the 8th, Monday, 2016. It is a true honor to have on the line M.K. Yehuda Glick from the Likud Party, who recently became a member of Knesset, longtime activist for the Temple Mount. He joins us now on the line. Thank you so much, M.K. Glick. Shavua Tov. Welcome to Israel Uncensored here on thelandofisrael.com.
Shalom, shalom from Jerusalem.
This is a difficult week for the Jewish people, as it is every year, the 9 days leading up to Tisha B'Av, a day of mourning and tragedy throughout Jewish history, from the sin of the spies to the destruction of both temples, several hundred years apart, of course. Give us your thoughts now during the 9 days here that we're just beginning here, leading up to Tisha B'Av.
As we know, Baruch Hashem, let's start from the good side, that we Jewish people have came back home to their homeland, and we're back home in our land, and that's something we have to thank God for every single day, something that our ancestors didn't have the privilege of experiencing. But as we approach the Tisha, we remind ourselves that the foundation stone of the entire Jewish life is Temple Mount, the connection between the people of Israel and God, and that the destruction of the Temple, first and second Temple, is considered the greatest tragedy of the Jewish people ever since in history. Just to point out that our scholars have told us to fast on the days of the prepared towards the destruction of the temple. We have the 10th of Tevet and we have the 17th of Tammuz, which commemorate the siege on Jerusalem. But there's no other tragedy in the history of the people of Israel that these scholars officially mentioned and appointed a date of fest. And I just that would point out the concept that anybody who reads the Bible here, you take out the pages that deal with the temple here, you're left with no Bible left, because that's the whole core of the whole story. If God created the world, chose the people of Israel, wants us to bring the light of the nations to the people. And right now, when we look at the Temple Mount, and we see that Temple Mount, instead of being a world center of peace, is a world center of hate and harassment and incitement to terror. This is definitely something we have to assist.
So maybe this is a cliche question. Maybe you've gotten this before. You know, the phrase used in 1967 when Israel reclaimed the Temple Mount was "Har Abayit Be'edenu," the Temple Mount is in our hands. Do you believe here now, nearly 50 years after that historic event, especially as you describe the situation up on the Temple Mount, is Har Abayit Be'edenu, is the Temple Mount truly in our hands today?
The way I understand it, the Temple Mount is in our hands. In our hands means that it's not something that we're holding. It's something that depends on our activity. If the Temple Mount sees more and more Jews visiting there, then they'll get used to it and they'll be part of the natural view there. If Jews prevent themselves from attending Temple Mount, then we're in a problem. So yes, it's in our hands. It's in our hands to make the change. It's in our hands, the world, to get used to the fact that Temple Mount is a world center for peace and a world center for calling in the name of the one and only God. And that's in our hands. And that, no leadership can lead that. It's only the people themselves. We have to come and be there and show our presence and turn the place into a place of the world calling in the name of one and only God.
Are the numbers going up? Are more Jews visiting the Temple Mount these days?
By all means. When I began ascending Temple Mount in 1989, we were less than 100 Jews a year. In 2005, when I started our activity, we were 5,000 Jews annually. In 2015, we had 20,000 Jews ascending Temple Mount. So the numbers are growing. Unfortunately, not in the pace I would like them to happen. But that's what we're doing. We're calling people to join us and ascend the Temple Mount.
And what can people do in addition to visiting the Temple Mount? I mean, we see the almost daily videos of, unfortunately, the discrimination against Jews, whether it's from the Jordanian Muslim Waqf there up on the Mount, or unfortunately, sometimes it seems like the Israeli authorities are putting pressure on Jews who visit the Temple Mount, surrounding them, making sure God forbid that they pray on the Temple Mount, on our holiest place. What can be done in order to rectify the situation so that a Jew feels comfortable, not threatened or pressured while making a holy visit, a holy pilgrimage up to the Mount?
Just like in the beginning of the Zionist movement, step by step, more and more people join. And today we see the State of Israel as a fact. As soon as the Arab population will get used to the fact that we're here for good, things will change. And the only way that can happen is that we see more and more numbers, more and more people coming. And I'm happy to say that we do see more and more people coming. It's still not enough. But it's growing gradually, and that'll make the change.
And what are your personal plans for this Sunday for Tisha B'Av? It's actually the 10th of Av. The fast is delayed for one day because we don't fast on Shabbat. So this Sunday, do you have any specific plans? Will you be ascending the Temple Mount? What are your plans for this Sunday, M.K. Glick?
Personally, the decision of the members of Knesset to not ascend the Temple Mount, and unfortunately that is the situation today, but I will be definitely calling upon people to visit the Temple Mount. I will be visiting at the entrance of the Temple Mount, encouraging those who came. I will definitely be in this whole week, every single day, I'm speaking around the country about the Temple Mount and about the importance of ascending the Temple Mount. On Tisha B'Av night, I will be joining the march together with the women in green, surrounding the old city, and I will once again, as I said, I'll be speaking around the country this whole week, every single day, several times, just trying to raise the awareness of the central role that the temple plays in our heritage, and to call upon people to join it.
And one of the talks I want to pick out here for people to attend this Wednesday, August 10th, the 6th of Av, 7:30 p.m. The doors open. A lecture by M.K. Glick, Rabbi Glick, begins at 8 p.m. This is at Beit Knesset Nitzanim, the Nitzanim Synagogue in the Baca neighborhood of Jerusalem, Rehov Asher Street, number 3. And can you give us just a little bit of a preview of your talk here Wednesday night in Jerusalem?
Well, I'm going to be speaking is pretty much showing the importance of the Temple Mount and showing why and how we in our generation were so privileged. But this privilege gives us with a double obligation to promote the connection between the people of Israel and Temple Mount, and what happens is the alternative if we don't.
M.K., Rabbi Yehuda Glick, I want to thank you for your time this morning, wishing you a Shavua Tov, wishing you a meaningful fast upcoming, much success on your talks this week, and please God, as they say, the holiday, if you will, of Tisha B'Av, the commemoration, the sad day, one day will be a joyous day. Let's hope it happens soon.
Amen. Thank you very much. Shalom.
All the best to you. Take care. That was Temple Mount activist, Knesset member, M.K., Rabbi Yehuda Glick. He's been involved in rites for everybody, really, to worship on the Temple Mount. Unfortunately, as we discussed, Jews don't have the right to pray on the Temple Mount somehow. I don't know how we let this happen, Ben Bresky, who's here in studio in Jerusalem. I didn't really get to introduce the show properly because we went right to Rabbi M.K. Yehuda Glick. But it is Israel Uncensored here on the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com, for the 8th of August, 2016. Entering those 9 days we just did, Rosh Chodesh was Friday, and as I mentioned before, the fast is pushed off. For those of you who are planning on fasting, it's not on Shabbat, which is actually the 9th of Av. It's pushed off to the 10th this Sunday. And again, if you were interested in hearing M.K. Glick speak, Wednesday night, August 10th at the Nitzanim Synagogue in Baca, that's 3 Asher Street in Jerusalem. If you want to RSVP, give Gavriel a call, 053-275-0977, 053-275-0977, or get in touch with me here, Josh, at thelandofisrael.com. If you want more information on that event, I'm happy to give it to you or pass you on to Gavriel so that you can attend Rabbi Glick's talk, M.K. Glick's talk, this Wednesday night here in Jerusalem. Yeah, it is, you know, I was listening to Eve Harrow, one of our wonderful hosts here, recording just before myself, talking about how it's such a scary time of the year, and it certainly is. throughout Jewish history, a time of the year with tragedies. It all started really with the sin of the spies. I mean, that's where the downfall was. That's what made Tisha B'Av. Actually, Tisha B'Av was the sin of the spies, talking poorly, speaking badly about the land of Israel. I mean, that is, you know, you talk about a major sin. I mean, that's really what started it all. Sometimes people forget, of course, the destruction of the two temples, and if I'm not mistaken, the Inquisition from Spain in 1492, and so many other tragedies throughout Jewish history. I just visited the Gush Katif Museum in Nitzan on Friday, and you talk about a tragic event, the expulsion of 10,000 Jews from Gush Katif. It was actually scheduled for Tisha B'Av, and it was pushed off by a day once they realized and I don't believe in coincidences, once they realized that the date, I believe it was August the 15th, 2005, was actually fell out on Tisha B'Av. They pushed it off a day. What a tragedy. If you have not visited the Gush Katif Museum in Nitzan, this is actually my first time there. I visited many families who were expelled from Gush Katif in their temporary homes. Some I've visited in their permanent homes. By the way, there's still 140 families living in Nitzan 11 years later who do not have a permanent home, still living in caravans, still, when necessary, dodging rockets, and their shelters. They don't even have shelters. They have sewer pipes. That's what they use for shelters down there. But just another tragedy of our people, and I'll leave it up to you to place that tragedy in terms of, I guess, how bad it was in comparison to the temples, in comparison to the sin of the spies. I'll leave that up to you, but I had to point that out after visiting this past Friday. Just an emotional and well-done museum, really explaining the story of the people, the pioneers and the heroes of Gush Katif from the early days in building and planting and things growing, the vegetables used for, you know, exported all over the world in the sand. I mean, just a miracle. How do you grow vegetables in sand, tomatoes and all the other stuff and flowers in the sand? They found out a way to do it. And one of the craziest stories I got from Friday was how, you know, when the Jews return to the land gives back, the land gives fruit, it produces. And the second the Jews left Gush Katif, and the hothouses were disbanded. They are actually left in the way they were. You know, the buildings, the houses were destroyed. The greenhouses, once the Arabs and Hamas and the others took over, and those that weren't destroyed, some of them they destroyed. Others were actually left completely intact, and the Arabs tried to grow like the Jews did in Gush Katif, and they couldn't do it. The land would not give back its fruit. It would not bear fruit for those, the occupiers of Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, who took over that area tragically in 2005. Just to get to some news here, in Israel, the Olympic Games, you know, that's a major event taking place in the world right now. It's supposed to be about sportsmanship and love and harmony and putting your differences aside and no politics. Well, that isn't necessarily the case when it comes to Israel. Of course, we had the massacre in Munich in 1972, when the Israeli athletes and coaches were all murdered by PLO. Remember, PLO terrorists funded by Mahmoud Abbas, the financier of that massacre. But in this year's Olympics, you had a situation where the groups of athletes from the different countries were getting on the buses to head to the opening ceremonies. And lo and behold, someone, some genius in the logistics department decided that Israel and Lebanon, probably innocently decided that Israel and Lebanon were supposed to be on the same bus heading over to the opening ceremonies. Well, the Lebanese delegation refused to allow the Israelis onto the bus. I'm talking about one of the guys blocked the door and wouldn't let the Israelis onto the bus to travel over to the Olympic Stadium. This is 2016, folks, okay? You know, maybe I shouldn't be surprised with all the anti-Semitism and hate and BDS and all the other stuff going on all over the world. You think sometimes that places are neutral or off limits, like the Olympics, like a hospital, like any type of venue where politics are supposed to be put to the wayside, and you're supposed to focus on sport in this case. That wasn't meant to be in the opening ceremonies or leading up to the opening ceremonies, when the Lebanese delegation literally blocked the door, and the Israelis had to find another ride to get to the opening ceremonies. At what point an Olympic official decided, well, we'll just scatter the Israelis amongst the different buses. And the Israeli delegation said, no, we are traveling together. Number one, it's a security risk to leave the Israelis alone. And number two is we are a team. We're here representing. It's the largest delegation ever, 47 athletes representing Israel. And eventually they found them a separate bus. They accused Israel of being an apartheid state, and Israel couldn't get on a bus. The Jews had to travel separately. How ironic is that? How ironic is that? But that's our reality. In other news right now, there was a big story broke just several days ago since we last spoke about an organization called World Vision Evangelical Christians. They're supposed to be a humanitarian aid organization operating in Gaza. And big surprise, it was revealed that the organization's funding that was supposed to help the people, the poor in Gaza and whatnot, and build hospitals and do wonderful things, well, that money was being siphoned off to Hamas. I'm talking about millions and millions of dollars siphoned off to Hamas that went through. People donated, perhaps with good intention. Can't judge, maybe, or I don't know if they're who had good intentions, who had bad intentions in terms of funding the organization. But a story broke that the money, no surprise here, from that was intended to go to the people of Gaza through World Vision of Evangelical Christians, actually went to Hamas. Australia and Germany have suspended funding to the organization. We're talking about millions of dollars. Of course, where did the money go? Went to build more rockets and dig more tunnels, means of attacking Israel. And I'm upset about this very, very much. And I'm upset that the world fell for the trap and decided to donate, thinking it would actually go to the people, because we've seen time and time again, whether it's the PA or Hamas, stealing money from the people and advancing the causes of jihad, of terror. But this upsets me. But what upsets me perhaps even more is the fact that Israel actually does the same. How is that so? Well, Israel transfers materials, and they're so proud of it. If you go on Twitter, you see Israel Today transferred X amount of materials over to Gaza, and we're doing so much for the population there. But you know how much of that actually goes to Hamas? How many times has Israel caught all of this material that's being illegally snuck into Gaza that's supposed to go to the people, building material? It actually goes into making these tunnels, actually goes into making the rockets. So I do hold the World Vision Evangelical Christian Humanitarian, that's what they call themselves, organization, responsible for either falling asleep at the wheel or, I don't know, they say they're not in cahoots, they say they didn't know anything about it. Regardless, I blame them and, of course, Hamas for stealing all of the funding. But we have to look in the mirror as well. We continue to transfer over to Gaza, which is Hamas, all this equipment, which is just used against us. I mean, why are we supplying electricity to Gaza, at least part of Gaza? Egypt supplies electricity to the other parts. I don't know. You know, you call it humanitarian, but we are being taken advantage of in a major way. And it costs us in lives when this stuff happens, because Hamas gets stronger, their capabilities are stronger. So, yes, I blame those who stole the money from the World Vision. Perhaps World Vision themselves are guilty. But that being said, we have to look in the mirror as well. We have to look in the mirror here in Israel. All this talk on the weekend about building them a port and doing all these things for Gaza, I don't get it. I don't see it. I don't know why we're involved at all. It was bad enough. It was bad enough that we pulled all of our people out of there, expelled 10,000 Jews in 2005 out of Gaza. And by the way, another ironic point is before this so-called peace process, Oslo, that we have been still going down this path of Oslo, there were no, this is something I learned on Friday, there were no fences between the Jews and the Arabs in Gaza. The Jews could shop in downtown Gaza. The Arabs could come visit. There was shared technology and agriculture, all this stuff. But once we had peace, once we started down this path, that's when we had to build the fences, and that's when we had to build the barriers between the two people. And how ironic is it? How ironic is that? And now that we have peace, yeah, right, the fences have gone up, the terror has gone up ever since we've gone down this path. There's one other story before we go today. Another major news event in regard to Israel. Our defense ministry, led by Avigdor Lieberman, he released a strong statement, according to the Jerusalem Post on Friday, comparing the U.S.-led deal that limits Iran's nuclear capability with the failed 1938 Munich agreement with Hitler. So that drew the ire of the prime minister, his office, in releasing another statement thanking the U.S. administration for their support. Not sure who came out with this statement. A lot of people are saying it was a diplomatic disaster. A lot of people upset with Avigdor Lieberman. But that being said, you know, I think he's on to something here. Iran, according to Obama, the president of the United States, Iran is upholding the letter of the agreement, even though all this fishy information is being let out, all these reports indicating that Iran actually can achieve breakthrough nuclear weapons even faster under this agreement. And we all think, not we all, but many of us believe that this is was and will be a bad deal over time with Iran. Defense minister coming out with a harsh statement, many saying don't compare this to Munich. The prime minister distancing himself from Avigdor Lieberman, releasing a statement of his own. The President Obama somehow said that Israel knows. I don't know where he's getting his information. He said Israel knows that the deal with Iran is a good deal. We realize it now. I don't know who he's crediting here that quote to. I don't think anybody in our leadership has said this was a good deal, but the president claims that Israel knows it's a good deal. I say it's a bad deal. I say it only come back to haunt us in the not too distant future. Israel will have to take care of business by itself. It has not done so until now. I'm not sure why. Not sure why that hasn't been taken care of. The greatest threat to our country, Iran, who does tests with missiles, talking about and writing on the missiles how they were going to destroy the Jewish state of Israel. But some controversies there. We'll see how this goes in the diplomatic circles between Israel and the U.S., and we'll see how it goes locally between the various ministers of our government, Avigdor Lieberman, the defense, and Prime Minister Netanyahu. That's all the time we have this week here on Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com, the 8th of August, 2016. The next time we speak, hopefully will be happier times. We'll be past Tisha B'Av, past the 9th of the month of the ninth day of the month of Av. So for those fasting, those commemorating, wishing you a meaningful fast. You don't say easy fast, you say meaningful fast. And by next Monday, hopefully things will be happy and things will be great. Most importantly, between now and next week, be safe. If you want to get in touch with me, it's Josh at thelandofisrael.com, Jew of Zion on Twitter, Josh Haston on Facebook. Shout out to Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Without him, there's no sound. Be safe, everybody. Have a meaningful fast.
The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects. To revive the land for the nation, to revive Judaism in our hearts, and to revive our hearts for Judaism. The Land of Israel Network brought to you by Mizrahi Olami. That's the Mizrahi World Movement.
My name is Tommy Waller. I'm the founder and president of HaYovel. More than 12 years ago, I made my first trip to the Land of Israel. What I saw and heard changed my life forever. I stood with Nir Levi, an Orthodox Jewish man, in his vineyard in Samaria on the Mountain of Blessing. There he opened his Bible and read the prophecy of Jeremiah that said, "You shall yet plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria." This fall, during the grape harvest, we have the opportunity to join Israel as it celebrates the 50th year of the liberation of Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. Come join us as we witness the unveiling of prophecy in the Jubilee year. Come be a part of the biblical narrative. Go to HaYovel.com, that's HaYovel.com, to find out more. And I hope to see you there.